Chapter 91. Starched apoplectic cravats, but a good, easy, old-fashioned white neckcloth that a man might go to bed in and be none the worse for. But what principally attracted the attention of Nicholas was the old gentleman's eye. Never was such a clear, twinkling, honest, merry, happy eye as that. And there he stood, looking a little upward, with one hand thrust into the breast of his coat, and the other playing with his old-fashioned gold watch chain. His head thrown a little on one side, and his hat a little more on one side than his head. But that was evidently accident, not his ordinary way of wearing it. With such a pleasant smile playing about his mouth, and such a comical expression of mingled slyness, simplicity, kind-heartedness, and good humor, lighting up his jolly old face, that Nicholas would have been content to have stood there, and looked at him until evening, and to have forgotten, meanwhile, that there was such a thing as a soured mind or a crabbed countenance, to be met with in the whole wide world. But, even a very remote approach to this gratification, was not to be made, for although he seemed quite unconscious of having been the subject of observation, he looked casually at Nicholas, and the latter, fearful of giving offense, resumed his scrutiny of the window instantly. Still, the old gentleman stood there, glancing from placard to placard, and Nicholas could not forbear raising his eyes to his face again. Grafted upon the quaintness and oddity of his appearance, was something so indescribably engaging, and bespeaking so much worth, and there were so many little lights hovering about the corners of his mouth and eyes, that it was not a mere amusement, but a positive pleasure and delight to look at him. This being the case, it is no wonder that the old man caught Nicholas in the fact, more than once. At such times, Nicholas colored and looked embarrassed. For the truth is, that he had begun to wonder whether the stranger could, by any possibility, be looking for a clerk or secretary, and thinking this, he felt as if the old gentleman must know it. Long as all this takes to tell, it was not more than a couple of minutes in passing. As the stranger was moving away, Nicholas caught his eye again, and, in the awkwardness of the moment, stammered out an apology. "No offense. Oh, no offense," apostrophe said the old man. This was said in such a hearty tone, and the voice was so, exactly what it should have been from such a speaker, and there was such a cordiality in the manner, that Nicholas was emboldened to speak again. "A great many opportunities here, sir," apostrophe he said, half smiling as he motioned towards the window. "A great many people willing and anxious to be employed have seriously thought so very often, I dare say," apostrophe replied the old man. "Poor fellows, poor fellows," apostrophe apostrophe, he moved away as he said this, but seeing that Nicholas was about to speak, good-naturedly slackened his pace, as if he were unwilling to cut him short. After a little of that hesitation which may be sometimes observed between two people in the street who have exchanged a nod, and are both uncertain whether they shall turn back and speak or not, Nicholas found himself at the old man's side. "You were about to speak, young gentleman. What were you going to say?" "Apostrophe apostrophe, merely that I almost hoped, I mean to say, thought you had some object in consulting those advertisements," apostrophe said Nicholas. Eh? What object now, what object?" apostrophe returned the old man, looking slyly at Nicholas. "Did you think I wanted a situation now, eh? Did you think I did?" apostrophe, Nicholas shook his head. "Ha, ha," apostrophe laughed the old gentleman, rubbing his hands and wrists, as if he were washing them. "A very natural thought, at all events, after seeing me gazing at those bills. I thought the same of you, at first. Upon my word I did." "Apostrophe, if you had thought so at last too, sir, you would not have been far from the truth," apostrophe rejoined Nicholas. "Eh?" apostrophe apostrophe cried the old man, surveying him from head to foot. "What? Dear me. No. Well-behaved young gentleman reduced to such a necessity. No. apostrophe, Nicholas bowed, and bidding him good morning, turned upon his heel. Stay, apostrophe, said the old man, beckoning him into a by street, where they could converse with less interruption. What do you mean, eh? Apostrophe, merely that your kind face, and manner both so unlike any I have ever seen tempted me into an avowal, which, to any other stranger in this wilderness of London, I should not have dreamt of making, apostrophe, returned Nicholas. Wilderness. Yes, it is, it is. Good. It is a wilderness, apostrophe, said the old man with much animation. It was a wilderness to me once. I came here barefoot. I have never forgotten it. Thank God. Apostrophe, and he raised his hat from his head, and looked very grave. What's the matter? What is it? How did it all come about? Apostrophe, said the old man, laying his hand on the shoulder of Nicholas, and walking him up the street. Here, eh? Apostrophe, laying his finger on the sleeve of his black coat. Who's it for, eh? Apostrophe, my father, apostrophe, replied Nicholas. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old gentleman quickly. Bad thing for a young man to lose his father. Widowed mother, perhaps? Apostrophe, Nicholas sighed. Brothers and sisters too? Eh? Apostrophe, one sister, apostrophe, rejoined Nicholas. Poor thing, poor thing. You are a scholar too, I dare say? Apostrophe, said the old man, looking wistfully into the face of the young one. I have been tolerably well educated, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Fine thing, apostrophe, said the old gentleman, education a great thing. A very great thing. I never had any. I admire it the more in others. A very fine thing. Yes, yes. Tell me more of your history. Let me hear it all. No impertinent curiosity, no, no, no. Apostrophe, there was something so earnest and guileless in the way in which all this was said, and such a complete disregard of all conventional restraints and coldnesses, that Nicholas could not resist it. Among men who have any sound and sterling qualities, there is nothing so contagious as pure openness of heart. Nicholas took the infection instantly, and ran over the main points of his little history without reserve. Merely suppressing names, and touching as lightly as possible upon his uncle's treatment of Kate. The old man listened with great attention, and when he had concluded, drew his arm eagerly through his own. Don't say another word. Not another word, said he. Come along with me. We mustn't lose a minute. Apostrophe, so saying, the old gentleman dragged him back into Oxford Street, and hailing an omnibus on its way to the city, pushed Nicholas in before him, and followed himself. As he appeared in a most extraordinary condition of restless excitement, and whenever Nicholas offered to speak, immediately interposed with, Don't say another word, my dear sir, on any account not another word, apostrophe, the young man thought it better to attempt no further interruption. Into the city they journeyed accordingly, without interchanging any conversation. And the farther they went, the more Nicholas wondered what the end of the adventure could possibly be. The old gentleman got out, with great alacrity, when they reached the bank, and once more taking Nicholas by the arm, hurried him along Threadneedle Street, and through some lanes and passages on the right, until they, at length, emerged in a quiet shady little square. Into the oldest and cleanest looking house of business in the square, he led the way. The only inscription on the doorpost was cheerable, Brothers, apostrophe, but from a hasty glance at the directions of some packages which were lying about, Nicholas supposed that the Brothers Cheerable were German merchants. Passing through a warehouse which presented every indication of a thriving business, Mr. Cheerable, for such Nicholas supposed him to be, from the respect which had been shown him by the warehousemen and porters whom they passed, led him into a little partitioned off counting house like a large glass case, in which counting house there sat as free from dust and blemish, as if he had been fixed into the glass case before the top was put on, and had never come out since a fat, elderly, large-faced clerk, with silver spectacles and a powdered head. Is my brother in his room, Tim? Said Mr. Cheeryble, with no less kindness of manner than he had shown to Nicholas. Yes, he is, sir, replied the fat clerk, turning his spectacle glasses towards his principal, and his eyes towards Nicholas, but Mr. Trimmers is with him. And what has he come about, Tim? Said Mr. Cheeryble. He is getting up a subscription for the widow and family of a man who was killed in the East India docks this morning, sir, rejoined Tim. Smashed, sir, by a cask of sugar. He is a good creature, said Mr. Cheeryble, with great earnestness. He is a kind soul. I am very much obliged to Trimmers. Trimmers is one of the best friends we have. He makes 1,000 cases known to us that we should never discover of ourselves. I am very much obliged to Trimmers. Saying which, Mr. Cheeryble rubbed his hands with infinite delight, and Mr. Trimmers happening to pass the door that instant, on his way out, shot out after him, and caught him by the hand. I owe you 1,000 thanks, Trimmers, 10,000 thanks. I take it very friendly of you, very friendly indeed, said Mr. Cheeryble, dragging him into a corner, to get out of hearing. How many children are there, and what has my brother Ned given, Trimmers? There are 6 children, replied the gentleman, and your brother has given us £20. My brother Ned is a good fellow, and you're a good fellow too, Trimmers, said the old man, shaking him by both hands with trembling eagerness. Put me down for another 20 or stop a minute, stop a minute. We mustn't look ostentatious. Put me down £10, and Tim Linkinwater £10. A check for £20 for Mr. Trimmers, Tim. God bless you, Trimmers, and come and dine with us some day this week. You'll always find a knife and fork, and we shall be delighted. Now, my dear sir, check from Mr. Linkinwater, Tim. Smashed by a cask of sugar, and 6 poor children, oh dear, dear, dear. Talking on in this strain, as fast as he could, to prevent any friendly remonstrances from the collector of the subscription on the large amount of his donation, Mr. Cheeryble led Nicholas, equally astonished and affected by what he had seen and heard in this short space, to the half-open door of another room. Brother Ned, said Mr. Cheeryble, tapping with his knuckles, and stooping to listen, are you busy, my dear brother, or can you spare time for a word or two with me? Brother Charles, my dear fellow, replied a voice from the inside, so like in its tones to that which had just spoken, that Nicholas started, and almost thought it was the same, don't ask me such a question, but come in directly. They went in, without further parley. What was the amazement of Nicholas when his conductor advanced, and exchanged a warm greeting with another old gentleman, the very type and model of himself, the same face, the same figure, the same coat, waistcoat, and neckcloth, the same breeches and gaiters, nay, there was the very same white hat hanging against the wall. As they shook each other by the hand, the face of each lighted up by beaming looks of affection, which would have been most delightful to behold in infants, and which, in men so old, was inexpressibly touching. Nicholas could observe that the last old gentleman was something stouter than his brother. This, and a slight additional shade of clumsiness in his gait and stature, formed the only perceptible difference between them. Nobody could have doubted their being twin brothers. Brother Ned, said Nicholas's friend, closing the room door, here is a young friend of mine whom we must assist. We must make proper inquiries into his statements, in justice to him as well as to ourselves, and if they are confirmed, as I feel assured they will be, we must assist him. We must assist him, Brother Ned. It is enough, my dear brother, that you say we should, returned the other. When you say that, no further inquiries are needed. He shall be assisted. What are his necessities, and what does he require? Where is Tim Linkinwater? Let us have him here. Apostrophe, both the brothers, it may be here remarked, had a very emphatic and earnest delivery. Both had lost nearly the same teeth, which imparted the same peculiarity to their speech, and both spoke as if, besides possessing the utmost serenity of mind that the kindliest and most unsuspecting nature could bestow, they had, in collecting the plums from fortune's choicest pudding, retained a few for present use, and kept them in their mouths. Where is Tim Linkinwater? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Brother Ned. Stop, stop, stop. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Brother Charles, taking the other aside. I've a plan, my dear brother, I've a plan. Tim is getting old, and Tim has been a faithful servant, Brother Ned, and I don't think pensioning Tim's mother and sister, and buying a little tomb for the family, when his poor brother died, was a sufficient recompense for his faithful services. Apostrophe, no, 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 apostrophe, replied the other. Certainly not. Not half enough, not half. Apostrophe, if we could lighten Tim's duties, apostrophe, said the old gentleman, and prevail upon him to go into the country, now and then, and sleep in the fresh air, besides, two or three times a week, which he could, if he began business an hour later in the morning, old Tim Linkinwater would grow young again in time, and he's 3 good years our senior now. Old Tim Linkinwater young again. Eh, Brother Ned, eh? Why, I recollect old Tim Linkinwater quite a little boy, don't you? Ha, ha, ha. Poor Tim, poor Tim. Apostrophe, and the fine old fellows laughed pleasantly together, each with a tear of regard for old Tim Linkinwater standing in his eye. But hear this first, Brother Ned, apostrophe, said the old man, hastily, placing 2 chairs, one on each side of Nicholas. I'll tell it you myself, Brother Ned, because the young gentleman is modest, and is a scholar, Ned, and I shouldn't feel it right that he should tell us his story over and over again, as if he was a beggar, or as if we doubted him. No, no, no. Apostrophe, no, 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 apostrophe, returned the other, nodding his head gravely. Very right, my dear brother, very right. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.